Hold on.
Blog Talk Radio.
Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and with me is my buddy.
Hey, it's John Arricchio here, guys. How are you?
You're so funny, Johnny boy. You're like, yeah, that's me. Well, we have a great show for you guys tonight. We have the amazing Allison Ardrum from Little House on the Prairie. She played Nellie Olson. And we have Cindy with us tonight. Cindy Mitchum
Asbill.
Thank you. I was going to say, I'm sure she'll let me know. Cindy Mitchum Asbill and also Allison Ardrum tonight. So before we start, let's hope everybody's doing well. Let's say thank you to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kittnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey, Oleander Public Relations in Texas, and Take a Break from Cancer.org, for Pete's sake. Oh, boy, what a breath, huh? What a mouthful on that. Cindy, welcome to the show. On the phone, Cindy Mitchum Asbill. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Good. Thank you for joining us. And it's just so ironic that also it is your uncle's anniversary of his passing today as well. Am I correct?
It is, 23 years ago.
Wow, it's amazing, right? Jeez, I'm so sorry.
It still hurts, but
well,
it is what. Yeah,
it doesn't go away. I mean, you know, it's, for any of our losses, it doesn't go away. You know, we just have to somehow carry on and do what we have to do, you know. But rest in peace, Robert Mitchum, on your anniversary today. And you're also, you're the niece of Robert Mitchum, and you're also the daughter of John Mitchum. Now, John, I have to apologize. I didn't know John very much, but when I see his picture and his credits, I do recall him now. Of course, Robert was the more famous of the two, right? I don't want to jump over anything and step on any toes here.
Oh, there's absolutely no stepping on any toes. My uncle was a huge, huge worldwide movie star, and my dad was a character actor. And he was very proud of being a character actor. He was in over 800 TV episodes and 60 feature films. People now are, the more I'm working with his legacy, the people are realizing that they grew up watching him. He was in everything. But
yeah,
but that's the crown jewel of being a character actor, is to have people not really know who you are.
You're doing your job right. That's what it is. You know, that's the whole thing. If you're a character actor, you know, you did it right. You're a great actor at it. So, you know, you're great at it. So now let me.
He had great fun when people would say that they recognized him, and he would tell them that he was their butcher.
That's where you recognize me from, right? That's what he'd say?
Oh, yeah. He loved tricking people like that.
Oh, that's so funny. Are you in the industry at all, since you have famous blood in your veins?
Oh, no. No, the benchmark was much too high for me to try and even want to jump in that arena. I did modeling when I was younger, and now that Dad has passed, I am responsible for all of his work. And he was nominated for a Grammy for writing the only album that John Wayne ever recorded. And so when he passed away, Ernest Borgnine and A.C. Lyles, the great producer from Paramount, told me I had to do something. And Ernie came up with the idea of having a CD done with all of Dad's friends picking their favorite poem or song. So it's being released finally this month. There's 56 great Western and film noir stars that have each picked something to contribute to the CD.
Wow. Can you name a few that we would know who was on it?
Sure. There's a few like Robert Duvall and Jane
Russell
and James Drury and David Huddleston and L.Q. Jones and Anne Rutherford and Peggy Stewart and Jim Beaver on a more current end of it. So we even have some musicians, Susan Cowsill and Dwight Twilley, have contributed. So there's quite a few people.
Yeah, that's cool. I've been trying to reach Susan, actually.
Oh, she's an absolute love. I actually went to school. So I've known her since high school.
Wow, I'd love to get in touch with her. Wow. But let me ask you now, your father wrote the poem America, Why I Love Her?
Correct.
I never heard it.
It's actually the de facto national poem. It's been used in lieu of prayer for the opening of Congress. The military use it. It's in the Boy Scout handbook. It's in college textbooks. And it's used for 4th of July parades and firework displays. And it's used in rodeo grand entries. And that's the poem that Robert Duvall recorded for me, and the Sons of the Pioneers did the backup music for it.
Oh, well, on the new CD.
Yeah.
Yeah, and John Wayne did the original.
Absolutely.
Right. I got to hear that. After the show, I have to definitely tap into YouTube and check that out. So now your father wrote the book, them ornery Mitchum boys, or both of them did?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
That's all Dad.
When did that come out?
That came out in 1986.
Oh, wow.
Excuse me, 89. It came out in 89.
Okay. Wow. So you must be excited about the CD.
I'm tremendously excited about it. It's turned out, if my husband and I had known what we were going to get involved in, I think I would have run the other way. But it's just overwhelming. Leonard Maltin told me that there's never been a project of this magnitude done before, and there never can be again because of the people involved.
Yeah, that's a lot of people, too. 56.
And that was part of the thing. It took 7 years to get Wilford Brimley into the recording studio, not because Wilford didn't want to do it, but Wilford likes to live way out in the middle of nowhere. So just trying to coordinate. And then, you know, it was the older people that wanted to do it, and they all contacted me to do it. And the older ones, we had to worry about their health issues, and the younger ones were still working, so we had to work around their work schedules. So it's taken quite a long time to get it all done, but we're finally there.
So is there actually 56 cuts on it, or they kind of work together to add up to the 56 people? Like, are people collaborating one song?
No, the only two that Susan Cowsill did a single song, and then she did a duet with Dwight Twilley.
Oh, what song did they do?
They're all songs that my dad wrote.
Oh, they're all
everything
songs. Every
song and every poem on the track. On the CD, my dad has written. And there is a special thing, Andrew Fennedy, who recently passed away, but Andy was a huge producer and a writer, and he wrote Chisholm that John Wayne did. And Brando. And Andy was a dear, dear friend of Dad's for years, and he did a eulogy that was just amazing about Dad and Bob. So he recorded that. And so the eulogy for Dad is on the CD as well.
Wow, and the songs, are they country western songs or because the theme is country, right? It's unabashed love of cowboys, country, and God. No,
There's a combination. One of them that we kind of did a little fun trick with was a piece called California USA, which was just a fun little 60s song about, I grew up in the valley in L.A., San Fernando Valley. We had a pool in our backyard. So it's just a fun little song about that. And we had Dad singing it, and Julie Rogers, who was Roy and Dale's granddaughter, did harmony with Dad. So we've got Julie and Dad singing together. And then Phil Crosby Jr., who is Bing's grandson, and was a dear, dear friend of Dad's. Phil sang a song that we found, but we found a whole box of reel-to-reels that Dad hadn't even labeled. And one of them was a complete album, and it was completely mastered and ready to go. All songs that Dad had written, Dad sang them, and Roy Lanham, who was the lead guitarist for the Sons of the Pioneers, and Harold Hensley, who was a fiddle player for the Grand Ole Opry, and Dusty Rhodes, another fantastic bass player, they were all on this album. And so Phil Crosby Jr. picked one of those songs, which is just kind of a fun song.
Wow. So now let me ask you, did they use the original music that was on the reels, or did they redo it? Did they get musicians
in to redo it? They did it themselves. I mean, they did the melody, the same melody. But
did they come in and replay the actual song and not use the reel-to-reel music and take the vocals off? You know, they redid the music.
Susan changed it.
You know what I mean?
No, Susan and Phil did it their own way. And with Julie Rogers, since she was singing with Dad, that's the original music.
Oh, wow. That's
so it's a combination
cool.
of both. Whatever works with whatever. And then Randy Boone from the Virginian sang one of Dad's songs, and he did it his way.
Wow. Wow. And did your father have CD, albums out himself? I mean, I apologize. I didn't get a computer crack,
right.
So I didn't get a chance to look at anything.
He did. He had a beautiful, magnificent album that he did with Dan Blocker. And Dan Blocker did not sing at all. But my father was classically trained. And so Dad had a love of history. So he did an album. He wrote all the narration. He had and Uncle Bob actually did the liner notes on this album that RCA put out. It's called Our Land, Our Heritage. And Dad took folk songs and was very interested in why did this song stay and the song that was written next to it disappear. So things like the Erie Canal and Steal Away and things like that. Dad wrote all of the narration that Dan Blocker recited, and then Dad sang the folk song with the Ken Darby choir behind him.
Wow.
It's a fabulous album, an absolutely fabulous album.
And you know what? Based on the title alone, and it sounds like really heartland to the heart music when things were normal, I think this CD would be perfect for right about now. The message is probably, I'm just feeling what the message is, that it's the love of the country. We love our country. Let's get that feeling back again, you know? And
absolutely. They all are. And RCA gave me the rights to the Our Land, Our Heritage. So we've actually done it and put it on a CD since people don't have LPs for the most part anymore.
Right. And what are you doing? What are you doing on Facebook right now? You're reading excerpts, or you're playing music, or I know you're doing something to keep Dad's.
I'm doing both. I started when all of this COVID nonsense started. I started just sharing a story a day from Dad's book.
Cool.
Some of them were insightful. Some of them were humorous. Some of them were, historical.
I'm sure people are loving it.
They are, because it's not it's not just a Hollywood kiss and tell story. It's one of my dear friends said that it's actually true Americana, because my biological grandfather was killed when my grandmother was pregnant with my dad, so he never got to meet his father. And in 1919, after the plague, you know, that influenza epidemic, it was a very treacherous thing to be a Norwegian widow with three small children. So they had a kind of a difficult childhood. They and Dad and Uncle Bob both started riding the rails, and Dad rode back and forth across the country four times before he was 16. And going, they were living in Delaware and Bridgeport, Connecticut, and in New York. They lived in Hell's Kitchen for a while. And my oldest aunt left home at 15 to join a vaudeville dance team. And she married a sailor and got stationed in Long Beach. So when the Depression hit and they lost the farm, she said, come out to California. But there wasn't enough room in the car for Dad and Bob, so they started hoboing. So Dad saw parts of this country that we could only dream of. And from that is what he drew from to write America, Why I Love Her.
Right. Well, yeah, from the experiences that he had,
I mean, it's
probably all over the place.
For that particular piece is not political at all. It's about the beauty of the country.
Right. Well, I don't think that it sounds like the whole CD is not political at all. It's about the beautiful country that we have. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It'd be so perfect for now. So perfect.
Ernie and AC took me aside and they said that the country deserves and needs to hear my dad's poetry and that I couldn't be selfish and keep it in a drawer. So when you're given that gauntlet, how are you going to walk away from it?
Exactly. Wow. Wow. It's just, it's amazing. I can't wait to check it out. After the show, I'm going to go on YouTube and check everything out, especially the John Green poem. I probably know it and don't recall hearing it.
Oh, yeah, you would definitely know it. It starts off with, have you seen a Kansas sunset or an Arizona rain? Have you drifted on a bayou down Louisiana way or seen the cold fog drifting over San Francisco Bay?
John, were you a Boy Scout, John?
No, I didn't have the pleasure to be a Boy Scout, but I do remember that poem, yes.
I don't know, it's just not ringing a bell with me. I don't know.
Well, some of the radio stations used to close with Wayne walking on a big map of the United States, and they would play it then too.
Right.
Once you hear it, you'll recognize it. But people, for years, the way that it was presented was America, Why I Love Her by John Wayne, and they didn't realize that Dad wrote it naturally, even though Dad was nominated for a Grammy for writing it.
I think Paul Harvey used to say that a lot on his radio show, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct?
Yeah.
It could be, yeah. Paul Harvey. Yeah.
That's where I heard it, yes.
Nah. Well, let me ask you that. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. No.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something. I'm so sorry. Let me ask you this. All right. Now, I'm not going to ask you how old you are, but were you around when John Wayne and everybody was working, when John Wayne did the poem? I'm sure he's been in your life. No?
I was in junior high when the album came out.
Oh, wow. And you must have, what did you think of John Wayne personally?
During that time, I was rather kind of annoyed because it was taking so much time. It took 3 years for them to do the album, and now I realize that it was because of the lung cancer and that he couldn't do the sessions for very long.
Right.
And then when the album finally came out, it was in the height of the Vietnam War.
Right.
And there you had John Wayne with this big waving American flag, and at the old record store, Tower Records, they used to put it in the comedy section. And that started annoying me when they did that.
Yeah. Why would they put it in the comedy section?
They didn't listen to it. They had no idea what it was. But the album, in 1973, without any advertising, without the luxury of Facebook or Instagram or anything else, sold over 100,000 copies the first weekend it was out.
Wow.
That's amazing.
You sound like an absolute wealth of information. My God, you need to put out another book. I mean, tell about what you know and what you've been through. Tell me about the book that your dad wrote about Unabashed Love of Cowboys, Country, and God. What is that one about?
That's a CD.
The book is Them Ornery Mitchum Boys. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. The book the dad wrote is, it's about the adventures of John and Robert Mitchum. And as I said, they lost their father before my dad was even born.
Right.
And so it's about their childhood growing up with a house full of love, but it was rather difficult. They went from their house in Bridgeport, Connecticut out to my great-grandfather was a Norwegian sea captain. So he had the standard home in Bridgeport, and then he had a farm that my aunt and her husband took care of. And so Dad and Uncle Bob were a little bit too much for my grandmother to handle, so she sent them out to live on the farm. So they had with their cousins, and there were seven children, my great-great-grandmother and my aunt, great-aunt and uncle, and all these kids, with one outhouse, and it had the water pump in the front yard and kerosene lanterns. So it wasn't an easy go.
No.
But they went from that to just how they survived and what they did, and then riding the rails and how that affected both of them.
Right.
And then going into Hollywood and what happened there. And they had no great desires to be actors.
Yeah, how did that come about? How did Robert become, like you said, I mean, it was tough times, and did he want to be an actor, or he was
No,
sort
not
of?
At all. Not
yeah,
at all.
How'd that happen?
Dad and Uncle Bob moved to Long Beach. Dad was in high school, and Uncle Bob had dropped out of school in seventh grade, so he had no desire to ever go back to school.
Yeah.
He didn't fit in with that sort of situation.
Yeah.
So they were having an absolute blast being kids from Delaware and Connecticut in Long Beach during the summer.
Right.
That's all they they just swam and hung out. What they wanted to do. Yeah. But Dad, when he was 16, he was a deckhand on a three-masted schooner. And in one trip to Mexico, going down, everything was just fine. They got to Mexico. He went into a bar with one of the other workers. And mind you, he's 16 again. And one of the men in the bar drew a pistol on him. And Dad looked at him and said, "You won't shoot me," and turned around and walked out. Well, years later, Uncle Bob told him that it was the hired hands for the governor of Mexico. And yes, they would have shot him in the back. But Dad got back on the ship. And first off, they hit a hurricane, and it cracked one of the masts. Then they ran out of gas, and then a sperm whale attacked them.
Oh, my God.
That's just one little weekend trip, you know?
Yeah.
And so what they encountered on a daily basis, people could only dream of today's world.
Right. Wow. So, but how did Robert or who got into the industry first?
My aunt Julie, who actually she was in some films like House on Haunted Hill and High and the Mighty with John Wayne.
Oh wow!
But Aunt Julie had joined the Long Beach Players Guild, and she asked them to join, and they had no intention on joining. They were having too much fun on the beach.
Yeah.
And she politely said, there's 30 women and only one man. You'll get pretty lucky. So they both joined. And that's what Uncle Bob was doing a play, and that's where he was discovered for the first Hoppy movie that he did.
Mm.
As far as Dad was concerned, he was just walking. It's the true story. He was walking down Hollywood Boulevard, and someone walked up to him and asked him if he was an actor. And Dad said, "No." And he said, "Do you want to be?" And Dad said, "How much does it pay?" So Dad did his first film called The Prairie in 1947.
Well, I'm sure they didn't regret it.
No, not at all. No. Uncle Bob, when things started getting tough and Uncle Bob was married and had a child, they were both working at Lockheed. And Uncle Bob was working double shifts, and he actually had hysterical blindness.
Oh, really?
From the stress of all of it. Yeah.
Wow.
From the stress of all of it. And it was my grandmother who told him to stop doing that and to do what he should be doing. And she's the one who pushed him along to go back into acting.
What was he doing that would give him the blindness? What type of work at Lockheed?
He was machine work.
Oh, okay. I was curious. You know, it's funny. You said something earlier, and now this, it triggered me back to what you were saying earlier. We've had a few other guests on that had famous parents. I guess, yeah, I guess they were their parents. I'm thinking of all the guests that we've had. And we've asked them, not the similar question, but in the same vein of, you know, what did you think of these celebrities coming over or whatever? And you're the second one that has said to us that, John, do you recall that you weren't too happy about it because they took your dad away from you, you know?
Yes, I remember.
Let me clarify that. That was with the John Wayne album because he was
gone
a lot doing that.
Yeah.
But with the difference between my house and my cousin's house is Uncle Bob would go away for long stretches of time doing the films. And the kids were either in boarding school or they were at home.
Right.
Dad did just a plethora of TV. So he was home most of the time.
Yeah.
And when he did do a picture like The Way West, we went with him. The whole family went.
Oh, wow.
So my house, and Dad being a character actor, he was friends with everybody. So I could walk in the door and there could be a stuntman, there could be a wrangler, there could be another character actor.
Right.
You know, one time I came in, there's a strange man was playing piano and it was Mousy Gardner's piano player.
Oh, wow.
And I never knew who was going to be in my house.
Right.
That, you know, that was just kind of the norm for me.
Yeah, right.
And
says too, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't realize the other difference is when I was very little, people would always ask me if I was related to Robert, which was confusing to me because my dad was on TV all the time.
Right.
And then I came to realize my parents didn't take me to the drive-in or the movies to see Uncle Bob and watch him in Cape Fear.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
you didn't see the movies, you watched TV. You were more TV
right,
girl.
But I didn't, I'm very grateful. I didn't, if I had seen that horrible Max Cady in Cape Fear as a six-year-old, I would never have hugged my Uncle Bob again.
Exactly,
It would have changed, you know. I grew up watching my dad die. You know, that was a family joke. Dad's dead. You know,
again,
Bob Fuller.
How many shows again? Right.
Yeah, Bob Fuller said he killed Dad more than anybody else in the business.
Oh,
you know, so
that was
a normal thing. But if I had seen Uncle Bob in roles like that, that would have been something totally different. So my parents were very wise and didn't let me see that.
Yeah.
So I was confused. I knew Uncle Bob was famous, but I didn't know exactly why. I knew he was a movie star, but I didn't know from what.
Right.
Because
right,
I never
right.
saw any of his films.
Right.
That's hey, Cindy. Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned before about your Aunt Julie in The House on Haunted Hill, and that's one of my favorite movies of all time. And did you know which character she played? There was two women in the movie. There was an older woman and there was
the one. She was the younger snarky one.
Yeah, she did such a great job in that. It's just amazing. And you would never connect that she was your aunt and she was related to Robert and Bob, your father and Bob Mitchum. It's incredible.
Yeah,
I didn't ever knew that.
She was Aunt Julie called herself a nightclub dame. She loved. She actually had, and I've researched it and I have verification. I mean, she told me, but then I have like the TV guide listings. She had a live TV show called The Julie Mitchum Show, which predated the Tonight Show and things like that. And it was set as a nightclub act. She had a little piano and cocktail table set up, and she would have her selected guests plus the audience all sitting at cocktail tables, having cocktails and smoking cigarettes, and she'd come out and do her nightclub routine on the piano. and then go and talk to the different people.
Oh, that's cool. Nice. That's cool. I got to ask you one thing about John Wayne again, only because we talked about him earlier. What'd you guys call him? Did they call him Marion or Mr. Wayne, John? What'd you guys call him?
Well, Dad always called him Duke. Wayne,
yeah.
One of the two.
Yeah.
And a funny story on myself is I was always raised to answer the phone in a very proper, professional way from the time I was allowed to answer the phone.
Right.
Because that was Dad's lifeline. That was his work. That's what, you know, that's how we were raised. And Dad had a very, very dear, close friend, another character actor named Greg Palmer, who did a lot of pictures with Wayne. And Greg, if you look him up, you'll know exactly who he was. And Greg did a fantastic imitation of Wayne. And I answered the phone one afternoon and I said, hello. And this John Wayne voice says, hello, is Mitch there?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, Greg, stop it. And there's this pause and it says, I'm not Grizzly, I'm really Duke. And I thought I was going to die.
Well, hello, is that John Wayne?
Cindy, your aunt also acted with John Wayne in The High and Mighty, right?
She did, yes. She was the creepy lady in the mirror.
Oh,
the wife in the mirror.
Well, see, we would never have known that. We would never have put those two together.
No. I mean, at the time, maybe people did, right? I mean, I have no idea. I got to ask you, your father or even you, what did he prefer, acting or his music and writing? And what do you prefer of your dad's, his acting or his music or his writing? And what was his favorite?
Oh, that's not a fair question.
I know.
They were both intertwined in him. And his first encounter with doing either, he had been run over by not one, but by two cars. Uncle Bob let go of his hand when they were little.
Oh, my God.
And the first car ran over Dad, and he tried to stand up, and the second car ran over him. So it totally shattered his jaw, and they wired it shut, and he had a steel plate in his head and the whole nine yards.
God.
Which, if you look at him, he's known for that weird lip, and that's because his jaw was shattered. But he was only 4 years old, and when he was in the hospital with his jaw wired shut, he found out that just going around in his wheelchair and singing, it made people smile. So when he got out of the hospital, he told Uncle Bob that. So Dad was four and Uncle Bob was six. And Uncle Bob came up with the idea of taking Dad down to the street corner in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and having Dad sing, and people would put money in the box. Uncle Bob would take the money until my grandmother found out about it, and that stopped that. So he started with singing. You know, it was to make people to Dad. It was to make people happy. For Bob, it was to get money.
Oh my goodness. Well, I wanted to ask, John, do you have anything while I'm thinking of this other question? Because, you know, I always lose my train of thought. I apologize, Cindy.
That's
mind
quite all right.
Spinning. Oh, geez. I had something about, what's your favorite Robert Mitchum movie?
Oh. That's a tough one, too. I really like Farewell, My Lovely. I think that shows the inside essence of him. And heaven knows Mr. Allison, you can't get better than that.
Oh, they're all,
but then
good.
If,
they're all good.
But then if,
I just
but then if you
want to
go, yeah, Cape Fear, as far as an actor, is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then the iconic Night of the Hunter with the love and the hate. I mean,
right. They are all good. I have to say, guys, what a conversation. Cindy, you are amazing. You got to put your own book together. Oh my God, you have so much information. It's amazing. Coming out next month or this month? Unabashed Love.
Well, now it's
Cowboys,
July,
Country,
so it's this
God.
Month.
This month.
It's this
where
month.
Can everybody
yeah.
get it? Where can everybody get it?
Just go on my Facebook page. Just look for Cindy Mitchum Asbill, and I'm putting up clips of videos of the different people. I've got the one with Robert Duvall doing America Why I Love Her, and Peggy Stewart is doing Mount Whitney, which is about Lone Pine, where they shot hundreds of Western films. And we've got one with Jimmy Hampton, who was Dobbs on F Troop. And we have a video with Mike McGreevy, who Mike was a Disney actor, childhood actor, but he did Riverboat with Dad. He was a little cabin boy on Riverboat, and then he was in The Way West with both Dad and Bob. And we have a video with Herb Jeffries, who was the sole survivor of the Duke Ellington band.
Wow.
And
I'm sorry. I was going to say you should really tag me on your when you're doing these, because my people would love to hear this stuff, my friends and the listeners of the show. And if they don't friend you themselves to see you on Facebook or to see you on Facebook, if you tag
well,
me,
I'll send you some of the links, and you can use them and listen to them and enjoy them.
Right. Cool. Do that. But Cindy, I don't mean to run, but we have Allison coming up, and I don't want to leave her holding. So I want to say
you don't
thank
do
you
that.
So. No.
Dad
thank
actually
you
did
so
one.
Much.
Dad
what,
did
what?
One
Go
little
ahead.
House on the Prairie with her.
Oh, did you really? How funny is that? We'll have to talk about that. So, Cindy,
all right.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
Thank
Mitchum,
you,
Asbill. Thank you so much for joining us. Check it out. The CD's coming out soon, Unabashed Love of Cowboys, Country, and God. Please check it out and look for Cindy on Facebook, where she does readings. She plays songs, everything in regard to her dad, John Mitchum, who was a fabulous writer. I have to go to YouTube and check that out. You know what I'm talking about. So, Cindy,
thank you.
Have
Cindy.
A good night.
Thank you
Take
for
care.
Having me.
Bye-bye. I believe we have the fabulous Allison Arngrim on the phone. Allison, are you with us? Hello? Allison? Oh, I think we lost Allison. Oh, no, Johnny.
She didn't call into the
no,
board, Joey.
No, I know. She called my line. Hang on one second. I'll get there.
See if you can get her back.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut her off. She had so much to talk about. My goodness. Hang on one sec, okay, guys? I'll be right back. Let's see if it's her.
All right. As Joanne tries to get Allison, we'll just talk about what's going on. How's everybody doing with their masks and their social distancing? I hope all is well, and then pretty soon maybe we can get back into making movies and get out to see some of our favorite bands play, because I tell you one thing, I'm getting tired of just sitting around not doing anything. So,
all right,
do we have Allison?
I'm sorry, Johnny boy. All right, folks, on the phone is with us on the show tonight. You might know her as that nasty, annoying Nellie, but she is not that. She is... Allison, I cannot wait to speak to you. I cannot, because I watched the show and I'm a fan, and I can't wait to talk to you. Ladies and gentlemen, Allison Arngrim, best known as from Little House on the Prairie, but you've seen her in many other things. How are you? Thank you so much.
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm great. I caught a little bit of your Facebook show tonight.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. This is the craziest thing, right? In March, everything hit and all my gigs were canceled, of course.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
safe. And everything I do seems to involve large crowds of people. And I'm like, oh, well, that's not going to work.
That's a good thing.
Right? Everything has been converted to an online experience now. And I thought, well, what the heck am I going to do? And I thought, I should go back and reread the Little House books, because, I read the books, I never read the books before I got the part on Little House on the Prairie. Half the cast had never read the books, but I got them as soon as I got the part. I ran out and read the books about the real Laura and the real Nellie, And it was fascinating. And I'd read them off and on over the years. I thought, I should go back and reread them and, like, in order to see, like, how the character develops of Laura and all. And then I thought, well, what the heck? Everybody else is stuck at home. Why don't I read them on Facebook Live and let everybody else share? And so and then I thought, well, what the heck? I'll wear a bonnet.
It looks great. I was going to say, for the folks who haven't seen it, she wears a bonnet, like back in the Little House on the Prairie days, and reads the stories from Laura Ingram. It's so cool.
And different color bonnets every day, because I have all these adorable bonnets from Minnesota, and so I wear them matching my outfits, a different bonnet every day, and I have different snacks, and I go, like, today is July 1st, and it's Canada Day, and I did tell them what day it is. And then I read, like, two chapters. I'm all the way up to these happy golden years. We got all the way through Little House in the Big Woods, Farmer Boy, Little House on the Prairie, on the banks of Plum Creek, Little Town on the Prairie. I'm all the way, I'm almost to the end.
Wow. How many books are there actually?
There's really, there's 8 and then 9 if you count the first 4 years, which is about the first part of her marriage with Almanzo and the birth of Rose, which was kind of, she wrote, it was like a manuscript that was found later, and her daughter Rose did a lot of edits on it. So a lot of people say first 4 years really reads like Rose, where it's a little different. But the 8 are absolutely the continuing story from when she's a tiny girl in a Little House in the Big Woods to when she's an adult and meeting Almanzo and getting married.
Right. Wow. That's, oh my God. You know, I didn't know Alonzo is true then. That was a true story, him coming in.
Right. I mean, now she does fudge. When you read the books, you go, hey, wait a minute. Wasn't she like 12, 5 minutes ago? And she changes timelines. Like in real life, she was in Walnut Grove, and they moved to Burr Oak, Iowa, and they moved back to Walnut Grove, and apparently they didn't like Burr Oak, Iowa, so she just skips that part and pretends they never went to Burr Oak, Iowa. She's like, I'll just skip it. So they go, she seems to have aged suddenly in this chapter, and she moves stuff around because it's like, wow, this one in Kansas, Little House in the Prairie when they're in Kansas, and a lot of people say, yeah, you know, she was only 2 when they were in Kansas, so like that didn't actually happen. So there's a lot of stuff where things are sort of timelines and ages are slightly changed, or they were only in somewhere. Well, same thing for the show. And then she mixed characters. She changed people's names. So then the show, we changed a ton of stuff and added characters. But the reality is she was already getting very theatrical and poetic license in her books to begin with. But it's quite something. It's fascinating
wow.
stuff. This girl writing about her childhood. It's amazing.
Well, I enjoyed the little bit I saw. Unfortunately, this is quarter end for me and my business that I do during the day, and I'm just like insane, pulling my hair out, and my mind is everywhere else but concentrating on what I need to do, and that is in regard to everything. So
and that's why though people like the readings. They all say, oh, I'm so stressed out and I have so much going on, and then I take a little break and it's like Little House in the Prairie time.
Well, I don't know if people know, but you're also a comedian. I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah. I started doing stand-up when I was like a teenager, and then in like 2002, I started doing this whole one-woman show where I tell all true stories, very funny stuff.
Yeah.
And again, I had a bunch of gigs coming up, and I went, I can't go to those. So the guys at Spin Cycle New York, who normally book me into the club in New York, well, they said there's this thing called Stage It. A lot of the comics are using, the cabaret performers. So next thing I know, I'm setting up my living room like a studio, and I did my act in my living room, and it went out as a live pay-per-view on this thing called Stage It.
No kidding. Oh, wow. We're going to have to check
that out. So I've been
doing
the stand-up. I've been doing that thing Cameo where you do the greetings. There's a marvelous thing called Coach the World where people can have a one-on-one conversation with you. So I'm signed up for everything. I'm queen of the internet this week.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? That's where if that's how you got to get it out, you know? I mean, I was sitting here today, and I'm like, God, I just want to go out and sing somewhere, and just I'm dying to. And I'm like, should I put up something? But anyway,
you should go. I'm telling you, it's a way to go. I got all my friends who are like comics and singers. They've moved everything onto the internet, and my husband plays guitar in a band, and the lead singer, she also sings, does a standards thing. She was like sitting home going, "What am I gonna do?" And now she got in with some singers in New York. she's been going online. She's been doing all the same thing. Well, I'll be singing this weekend. Oh, you tune in at blah, blah, blah. And she's on Zoom and everything else. So a lot of singers are doing online shows.
There's 20 different platforms.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't know about you, but with this crap that's going on, the people have been so creative. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Other than just singing, there's been so much talent out there that we've probably never seen before. You know what I mean?
There is so much brilliant stuff. People are creating entire shows.
I know.
They're like writing whole shows.
Bands
are doing Zoom with each band members in a different city, and they're all online at the same time playing. The Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles, that's like 200 people. They recorded a song. They called up and said, turn on your camera and your mic, record your part. We'll edit it in the studio, and we'll put it out. There's huge choirs of hundreds of people, and they're doing stuff online. Brilliant stuff.
God, it's amazing. That's why I said, if anything, being home has brought out everybody's creativity, and, you know, without today's technology, you wouldn't be doing any of it, but thank God for it.
Thank God. I know, right. Finally, the Internet's making itself useful.
Hey, Joanne. Joanne?
Yeah, there you are.
Yeah, speaking about the Internet, it cut me off. So
You're back.
Yeah. I totally lost the internet, so I'm on the landline, which is very reliable. So I'm back.
I was wondering who 610 was.
That's me.
Well, I wanted to ask you. We got to go into, of course, the show itself.
Absolutely.
And you know, everybody did find you annoying. And did you know it at the time when you were doing it? I mean, I thought you were funny.
Well, thank you. Oh, I was wicked and evil and vile. Yes.
Yeah.
When I went to the audition, I mean, it was crazy. They didn't tell me when I went to the audition because this little house was destined to be huge from the beginning. It had been such a big hit with the books, and Michael Landon knew that. So he comes off an end, so they want to do a show, and he says, I want Little House in the Prairie. They go, you're out of your mind. He goes, no, I want to do Little House in the Prairie. So they're doing this. It was the auditions for, like, the part of Laura, the lead, Melissa Gilbert. That was like the Search for Scarlett O'Hara for eight-year-olds. I mean, they saw the world.
Wow.
And they were having all these auditions. I went to this one audition very early on where they said, well, we're making a series out of these books, very early, just the beginning.
Mm.
Nothing came of it. Then they went it. Then I read for the part of Laura. I read for the part of Mary. Then they went off. The pilot, I thought, well, okay, we're done. And then they called me back, and I thought, well, how many people do they have on this thing? I had read the books. I was like, what's it, cast 1,000? And I get there, my dad and I, and I get the script, and I had no idea who Nellie Olson was. I started reading it, and I turned to my father. I said, this girl, this is not a normal part. She's a total you-know-what. She's a witch.
Yeah.
And he said, you're kidding me. And I started reading it. My father starts laughing. He says, oh, you go in, you read it like that. Don't touch it. Don't rehearse it. Don't do it. And I went, I was hired on the spot. They were in stitches. They were laughing so hard. Exactly. She was funny. Michael Landon, the producers, laughed so hard. They're going to be carried out of the room. And that was it. I nailed it. And I knew right away. I went, oh, I'm the villain. Oh, she's awful. But she's funny because she's like foolish and ridiculous and terrible. I was thrilled. I'm like, what a part, a character role.
Right. But was that your real hair or was that a wig?
For the first few months, it was my real hair. I had to get this. 12 years old, I had to sleep in curlers and come in at like 4 in the morning and go through this just absolutely horrifying process, get my hair done. And then my hair is so straight, just will not hold the curl. So they said, okay, this is ridiculous, this poor child. So they said, we're having a week. And they custom made this very elaborate, expensive wig, just fitted to my head, and that's what I wore for the next 7 years.
Wow. I was wondering if it was your real hair because you have that light blonde hair. And
Right.
And I was wondering how you felt wearing it. Did you really care or you didn't really? I mean, not the process.
Right. Well, Nellie was so prim and proper in the fancy dresses and the fancy hair. And you know, me, I was 12. I was a tomboy. I wore my jeans and my Converse tiny high tops and my T-shirt. That's what I wore to school. And suddenly I'm in a petticoat and ruffles and dresses and lace and ringlets and bows. And I was like, what is even happening? I had a friend come to the first episode. He looked at me and said, I think this is the longest I've seen you wear a dress. How did they get you in a dress?
Our only time, right?
Right? It was just, it was a total transformation. It was very crazy.
Well, how was it working with Michael Landon? Was he really a sweetheart?
fantastic. He was awesome. He was one of the funniest people I've ever met. Michael Land was hilarious. He had
and
a very crazy sense of humor.
And
gorgeous.
Yeah.
If it was possible to be better looking in person, he was. I mean, he had a gym on the set he'd pump up. And I joke about it in my stand-up act that here's Pa Ingalls on the prairie, and he's in tight pants and no shirt. I mean, does the man ever keep his shirt on? Wasn't he cold? but that was the thing. Is he knew. He knew people were tuning in.
Never even thought of that.
Right, because he was gorgeous, and he knew everyone was tuning in to look at him. So every time, did you notice every time Pa gets injured on the show, he only ever breaks his ribs? He never broke his arm, never his leg, only his ribs. So then they take his shirt off and they put on that ace bandage. And it's, it was that the shirt was off every episode. It was amazing.
You guys must have had like a really nice family atmosphere bond there, right? I mean, because
we did, amazingly. You know, people will say that, our set was like a family. And usually it isn't true. You know, in Hollywood, they finish the show, nobody ever speaks to each other again. We're all still talking. You may have heard when I was doing the Little House readings today, I've got Dean Butler, who was Almanzo on the show. He's reading tomorrow. He comes in.
Oh, cool.
If the book has a lot, like when we did Farmer Boy, which is like all Almanzo, I said, do you want to read Farmer Boy? He goes, can I, huh? And so he got to read some of Farmer Boy and some of what was the other one? There was another one, Long Winter, Almanzo Saves the Day. And he's like, can I read Long Winter? I love Long Winter. I'm like, okay. So I said, do you want to read tomorrow? They're starting to get near the engagement. So I said, the part where Almanzo proposes and you get married, I said, you're so reading those chapters, so you're on deck. But we're taking turns. I've had a couple of people come in and read. Miss Beadle, Charlotte Stewart came in and read. We're all still speaking to each other. We're
cool.
All still friends.
Nice. That's nice. That really is. Because, like you said.
Which is very unusual,
unusual. They say, we had a family bond, But, like you said, it's not true.
We actually did. We really liked each
true.
Other.
Well, I think a lot of people tuned in, not only for the fact that it was Michael Landon, too, and, God, you got to see his gorgeous body and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think maybe people may have taken it as a step further to Bonanza, too. You know what I mean? Like it was
right. Because absolutely, here he was, pretty cute little Joe, and then now he's suddenly gorgeous Paul. And he was very smart because he realized his whole generation of women had grown up reading the books, and then they watched Bonanza, and so here was the perfect thing of now little Joe's grown up and he's Charles Ingalls, who they all adore, and here's their show. It's like, and here's their Michael Landon, all in one package.
Yeah.
So it was brilliant. It was a brilliant, brilliant move on his part, and it was so well done. And, I mean, that's the thing is that the formula was there, but you remember, he was writing a lot of the shows. He was directing a ton of the shows. He was the executive producer. So he really oversaw the whole thing. He knew what he was doing, and he said, yep, this is what people want. He knew exactly what they wanted, and he gave it to them.
Right. Now, you've got a book out. Now, how did it feel at your age? Did people dislike you then or not until you got as the older kid? You know what I mean?
When I was young, I was very lucky that one of the smart things I did as a child actor, and I always tell anyone who's going into show business or putting their kids in, keep your friends. Keep your friends from when you stay in your school. I mean, you're going to have school on the set, but stay enrolled wherever the heck you are. So when you go on hiatus, you go back to school. Mm. Stay in touch with your friends that you were hanging out with and going to school before you got the show, because that's your, quote, normal life. That's your, anchor sense of normalcy, that there's the real world.
Yeah.
And so I continued to do that, which is very helpful, because once that character got out there, making new friends – that wasn't really going to happen. People believed it. They were terrified of me. And people did hate me. People threw things at me at personal appearances.
Are you kidding me? Oh my God.
So Christmas, the Christmas parade, Hollywood Christmas parade on Hollywood Boulevard, the Santa Claus Lane Christmas parade.
Yeah.
Someone threw a McDonald's cup of orange soda right at my face.
Wait,
Car was moving. I have to hand it to him. They hit me right in the face, and the car was moving. They really
was that Nelly age or after the show? I mean,
16 years old. Boom, right in the face.
Oh my God, people are crazy. I'm telling you.
And that was
you.
The thing. And I had people. Number of people would freak out. Sometimes they would meet me, and I still every now and then someone will freak out. They will recognize me, and they get this crazy look in their eyes, like they're frightened. they're yeah. frightened. And I'm like, no, really? Still? I had a woman come up to me. And
Still? Come on, I'll kick your ass. Still?
Just a few years ago. I'm a grown woman. I'm at an autograph show, and this is I'm well into my 40s. This woman comes to the autograph show and looks at me and just stands there. She doesn't say hello. She doesn't say good morning. She just, I forgive you, and walks out.
Oh, my God. People are so
She came all the way down there to forgive me. She was, like, angry at me for 40 years.
People are so detached from reality. Oh, my God.
Right?
Oh my God.
I still, every now and then, I mean, I've had some, and they'll admit, like, I was doing a play, and this really nice guy I became great friends with, it was great, and he said, before we started rehearsal, he said, I have to tell you. He said, this is going to be really weird. I mean, obviously, you're really nice, but I'm a little younger than you, and I grew up watching the show, and you were like this big girl who was so mean and scary. I had nightmares about you as a child and was afraid of you.
Right.
Wow. So he says, now I'm opposite you in this play. It's going to take me a couple of days to adjust to the fact that you're not going to, like, beat me up.
Are you kidding me? Now,
he said, I spent my whole childhood being terrified of you, and now you're sitting here talking and laughing. It's like freaking out.
Oh, my God. How old were you when you did the show?
I just turned 12, and I was there until I was 19.
Wow. So you did feel the wrath of while you were doing the show of people hating you while you were on the show. That must have been hard to do. Wow.
It's 7 years. So I went all through junior high school, all through high school, the most difficult time, growing up. I got braces on my teeth. The braces came off. I went through the whole thing, grew up, moved out of my parents, and I was still on the show.
Wow. Wow. Well, you have this. When did you write the book, Confessions of?
I wrote the book in 2000. It came out 2010, and then the paperback 2011, and then we just released the audio book. That's recent. And it's crazy because the reason I wound up doing the book all these years later is because people have not stopped watching it. It came out on VHS, and then it came out on DVD. It is streaming on Amazon. It is everywhere. It's on Cozy, and you have all these 8 million channels, MeTV, Cozy TV, this TV, Up TV, that TV. It's on all of them. It's on all of them, 24 hours of it.
It will be forever.
It's been dubbed into every language. It is all over the world. I just come back from France in February before this all shut down. I'm last plane out. I had just been in France, and because I was going to France every year, they're obsessed with Little House on the Prairie in France, and I go there and I do comedy shows.
Now, the book I'm talking about, folks, is called Confessions of a Prairie Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived Nellie Olson and Learned to Love Being Hated. How did you learn to deal with it?
Well, because it was, I realized at some point, like when it first started, I thought, oh, this is terribly funny. Because I was 12, I went, oh, ha-ha, I'm the villain. Great, it's like a horror movie. I'm the monster.
Right.
How
it
funny.
Was cool.
Great.
Yeah, it was cool.
I love
that.
It's cool. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
But then I was like, people are really freaking out. I mean, people really hate me. It's like, wow. And then I thought, well, I'm doing something right because these people they're not even coming up to me and saying, oh, you're a great actress. They're coming up to me going, oh, my God, I'm terrified of you. I hate you. And I'm like, wow, what did I do?
Well,
so I'm
getting
a nerve.
That's why you're a great actor.
Apparently, I'm a genius and do not know it. It was like, whoa, I'm so scary. They're buying this. They're believing this. Oh, my God. So that was weird. And then as it went on over the years, there were times where it was sort of annoying. I'm like, okay, now the show's been off the air. What the heck are we doing? Why is this still happening? But then as it went on, I went, this thing's in 140 countries. This is people literally, like, while I'm lying awake at night, somebody somewhere on the planet is watching the show and hating me.
Right.
It was crazy.
Right.
And then when I realized it was so funny, and
I didn't
started
hate, I didn't hate you. I thought it was funny. You were, you know, you were the little witch on the show.
Right. You got the joke. You got the joke.
You were the annoying kid, and, you know, they go and put you in your place eventually, but you didn't get it. But, you know.
Right.
You got
the joke about Mrs. Olsen and Nellie and how they were so nuts.
Right.
Allison,
right.
Did you narrate the Audible book?
Yes, I did my audio book.
That's
I went
great.
To the studio. And it was great because so many people who'd read my book said, in reading your book, the way you wrote it, it feels like you're sitting here in a chair across from me telling me this story.
Yeah.
I can hear your voice. So I went to the studio and did the Audible, and they said, oh, my God, you said it exactly the way I thought you were going to say it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because I love the Audible books. That's what I listen to, a lot of them.
Yes.
And I love it when the author narrates the book because it's so much more personal than just having somebody hired to do it.
Right.
Exactly. And some people can do it, like often when it's an actor or someone or a comedian or someone who does that. I mean, it's difficult for people if they're not an actor. It's like, oh, I got to read my whole book,
right.
And some can pull it off.
Well,
but, yeah, when it's an actor, like Charlotte Stewart did hers. Anytime you have an actor, it's like, yeah, get them in the studio because they can do it.
Well, it's also based on experiences, so you
right.
can really tell it the way it should be told, you know. You
exactly.
experience
and
it, you were there, you know. So.
And it was a really satisfying and fun thing to do, too. I'm so glad
good,
I did it.
Good. Well, you should always carry a copy with you so when someone attacks you or comes up to you, hold it up to them and say, yeah, get away from me. Yeah, take the
here,
book.
Here, read the book. You'll understand everything. It'll be fine. But see, now people are get like you. You got the joke. You saw, yes, and like Mrs. Olsen.
Well,
she's so
kind of normal in a sense.
It's like everyone knows a Mrs. Olsen. Everyone knows a Nellie. And now people get it more. People get it more. They're like, oh, yeah, this is hilarious. And they
right.
go, oh, it's so cool that you were this character. So
right.
I'm finally, like, getting my due.
Right. Yeah, I know.
But it's all over the world. I meet people from Argentina, Bangladesh, Borneo, Japan, France, Germany, everywhere, and they all have the same reactions. Like, oh yeah, Nellie Olsen, and oh yeah, Little House on the Prairie. They're all into it.
Well, you'll live forever as long as that, right?
Can't beat it.
No, not at all. Are you still involved with the National Association to Protect Children, Alice?
Yeah, ma'am. I just had to sign and notarize a bunch of paper. I'm president of the board of directors of the National Association to Protect Children.
Nice.
And, yeah, we do a lot of very high-tech stuff. It's very cool. We have the Weiss Center for Child Rescue, and it's all about because, you know, a lot of everything's on the Internet, including the predators and all the terrible things that are happening. So in order for law enforcement and the people who track these guys, these predators, these child predators and the child pornographers, they have to be one step ahead technologically. And so we help them do that, and we have a whole program of training people to go work with the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, all sorts of really, like, fabulous, clever things.
And when did you start this group?
They came to me. They were just, doing that out of a parking lot, the trunk of a car. A couple guys came to me back in, oh, good heavens, like 2004 now, and said, here's what we want to do. And we wound up doing legislative stuff, and I wound up going into Sacramento and getting laws changed. And next thing I know, I'm in Washington, D.C., and Albany, New York, and all over the country. And we've changed stuff at the federal level and the state level to really make the laws much more fair to the victims whenever we can.
Well, I wanted to ask you when you started it, because your type of protection you're trying to do now has probably changed dramatically from when you started. Was it more hands-on abuse type of thing, and now it's...
Oh, well, when we started, a lot of it, we really started with a legislative angle because we saw there were these loopholes in the law. They would catch someone... And then, wow, we arrested the guy. Wow, we have the evidence. Wow, we got the victim to testify. Oh, my God, we got him convicted. What do you mean he's out? And so they went, how? Wait, that was legal. And they found out there were all these loopholes in the law. So that's what the people who started it tended to be attorneys and law enforcement. They said, we have to go in legislatively to these states and say, no, this is a loophole. You're letting people go. You do not want let out. And they're manipulating the law and using these loopholes. These child predators who are like serial offenders, sexual abusers of kids, are finding these loopholes in the law and like walking out the courthouse doors. It's nuts.
Yeah.
So we went around fixing that, shoring that up, putting, you know, up the dam. And then as we got deeper into it, and of course all the Internet stuff, I said, this is crazy. Technologically, these guys are doing unspeakable things to children, and they're trading the stuff on the Internet. They're literally trafficking children via the Internet. And how does that work? What do we do? Well, there are police units, a specialized unit called the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, or ICAT teams. There's one in every big city.
Mm.
But they're just swamped. So how do we get them more tech? How do we get them more manpower? What would we do? So we started creating programs around that.
Right. Wow.
And so we keep finding these things going, well, that's horrible. Is anyone doing anything about that? No, that. Oh, well, let's see what we can do.
Right. Do you have any other celebrities involved, or are you the only celebrity involved?
I'm the only celebrity, and that was the thing. It was the thing that came to me. I had been abused as a child, but honestly, the executive director did not know that I had been abused as a child. I was called because I had done so much other activism and charity work with so many other groups that I was like, yes, this is a person who is you should call to come be on the board. And then it was like, be on the board? You're getting on a plane to Sacramento. We're doing this. And so then it really turned into a thing.
I wanted to ask if it was okay if I asked you how you got involved in the National Association to Protect the Children, but you just said so.
It's true. I mean, it was attractive to me. It was so attractive what they were doing, what they were actually doing, the fight they were doing, that, I mean, if I'd never been abused, I would have said, that's great. How do I get in on this? Sign me up. I'll do what I can. But in this case, because I had suffered physical and sexual abuse, I was like, okay, you guys are on the ball. This is what we need. Yes, I want to be in this.
Right. Well, you know from experience, sadly. Now, were you being abused during the show, or that's when you were younger?
No, it was after. But it was that I was very, very young when I say. And that's what's so weird, though. Then I'm suddenly on the show around all, and I'm famous. And you know, when you're a kid, and they tell you, don't tell anybody, and don't tell anybody. But you know, and you think that everyone can tell. You're like, God, can people tell? Can they look at me? Do they know that I? And then suddenly you're a teenager, and you're going to, and you're just sure people can tell. And then you're famous. You're like, I can't tell anyone. I can't tell anyone this happened to me. What will they think? So carrying this secret, and what I was, I'm really pleased. That I have to say, everyone in Little House, it was a very safe and supportive environment. Right. In fact, a few years ago, a woman who worked on the set, a teacher, said, had you come to me, had you told me, I would have absolutely reported it and done anything I could.
Right.
She said, we would have backed you up. She said, I'm sorry you didn't feel safe enough to tell us, but we'd have had your back, absolutely.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but I have to, because you are absolutely amazing actress that you were going through that and were still be able to function and act like nothing was going on. I mean,
right.
You really are a great actress. I mean, for you to do what you did and what you were going through, how you pulled that off, I couldn't do it, you know. So I mean,
well, and I've even said the advantage was, because one of the great things about playing Nellie Olson is what an outlet for all the pain and the rage and the angst. I would come to work and they'd say, okay, today you're going to scream like a banshee and smash everything in this room. And I'm like, great.
Yeah.
Where do I sign up? Sounds good.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, and what are they with everything going on now? There's so many people using the internet, especially the kids. I mean, how are you?
Oh man, this is one of the things we've had to tell people. Everyone's got their kids going to school online and community friends online, which is yay great. But B, there's people, you know the whole thing, people didn't figure out that you can set your Zoom meeting with a password. They were leaving their Zoom meetings open, and people would crash the Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
Hello, guess what? Child predators crash Zoom meetings where there's kids. Okay, there's a bunch of kids. And these guys, they try to infiltrate places, you know, TikTok, Twitter, places where kids are hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And Instagram is huge, and they will. They just had a friend the other day. Her daughter, 13 years old, Instagram, and she's saying, oh, we don't know, her account is absolutely set to private. She only has like a couple friends, and they're people she knows. She got messaged. Some guy was messaging her.
Totally
sexual.
Oh, my God.
Absolute raving pervert hitting up a 13-year-old girl on Instagram. They are going in absolutely into these spaces where they know kids are, and now where you've got all the kids home and on the internet, they're having a field day, and they're absolutely trying to crash these kind of parties and Zooms and everything and get in. And one of the things that was very big with Predators was like a lot of the online games. You know, people would be playing one of those like World of Warcraft kind of things, and there's always comments. They can comment to each other while they're playing.
Right.
And you can't see who it is. They're all an avatar or your character.
Yeah, right.
That was very popular. They would come in and they would pretend to be another kid, and then they'd start chatting up the kids in the game. And it's like, so where do you live?
Right.
And this is what they do. They go, it's the old cliche. Remember, it was about Willie Sutton, the bank robber, and they always said, why do you rob banks? And he said, that's where they keep the money.
True.
And I'm afraid, yes, child predators, child molesters, this is how they work. You go, why do they turn up in these places? Why are they the swim coach and the youth counselor and the teacher? That's where they keep the kids.
Right.
And they know where they keep the kids. And if the kids are all on TikTok or the kids are all on Instagram or the kids are all on Zoom, by golly, guess who's going to show up 10 minutes later?
No, people suck.
So people really, parents have to be very, very careful. They have to absolutely know who their kids are talking to all the time, because it, you would just, the links these people will go to, there is nothing so low they will not stoop to, no link that is too far they will not go to get to your children.
Right. It's disgusting. It really is. And tell us about the show that you're a host of, the Alice Argram Show.
Right. On top of everything else, every Tuesday at 5, I used to go down to this darling little studio. Now I sit in my living room and I go on Zoom and I interview all these fabulous people. I just had on the lovely Dreema Denver. You know, she was married to Bob Denver. She's got... Oh, she's marvelous. She'd written a book before, but she has a children's book out now. You should have her on. She's fantastic.
I'd love to.
It's lovely. I had on Lulu Roman from Hee Haw. I've had on Don Wells, Michael Learned, half the gang from Little House on the Prairie.
Michael's coming on. She's coming.
She's fantastic.
Yeah,
you will love her.
Us on, where is she? She is on the 8th. She's coming next Wednesday.
God. She is marvelous. You will love Michael Learned. She's great.
I love her. I know.
So I had all the cool people on, and then people who were maybe not as famous, but they wrote like an amazing book, or they were an artist doing this incredible art project, or some really fabulous new thing. And
cool.
I'm like, hey, great, you should come on. We need to know about this.
Right.
So
it's
been so much fun.
Yeah, isn't it fun? I love it. It's so much.
Well, it's fantastic. You know. Duh, I've been getting interviewed since I was a child, right? So I've been interviewed like 10 million times
right now. Right.
So this is like revenge. I get to ask the question. So.
Oh, I got to share something with you real quick. John, did I tell you this story, John? We had Taco on. You remember Taco putting on the Ritz?
Oh, my God. I remember that.
Well, he was in Germany. So when we have our guests from overseas, we do it on a weekend. And sometimes John can't make it because he works on the weekends, too. And we had Taco on a Sunday or a Saturday. I couldn't get in touch with him. A girl calls in. She wants to speak with him. Turns out she's a DJ. Pardon me. She's a DJ. And while I'm trying to connect with Taco, she's interviewing me. John, did I tell you that story?
No, you didn't tell me that, no.
Oh, my God, that was hysterical. I was like, oh, what a twist here. But, it was a lot of fun. No, definitely. I actually sent you a friend request today. I was hoping you saw it.
It's probably like 1,700 friend requests. But I will. I'll go look and pull you up.
Yeah, I did it today so you could see that we posted for the show tonight. To show you your
cool.
So your fans could know you were here. But, oh, my God, I can't even say thank you enough for joining us. It was a pleasure speaking with you, Alice.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Alice.
John, anything you wanted to add before Allison runs?
She's
exhausted.
She has so much energy. She has so much energy. I don't know where she gets it from. But
that's what I said.
I snuck in a nap today. Believe me, today was like the schedule of doom. I'm like, I'm taking a nap before.
That's what I said. Well, we better let you go after all the stuff you're doing. Oh, my God, now you take time to breathe. But folks, check out her book, Confessions of. I can't. Today, what is wrong with this? Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived Nellie Olson, and Learned to Love Being Hated. Now, if that's not an amazing title, I mean, come on. I mean, that's a mouthful. And she's also the host of her own show, her own podcast, and on Facebook, The Allison Argram Show. And how amazing, again, is on the board and is a founding member of the National Association to Protect Children. So, and just a fabulous actress. I mean, what more can I say, honestly? And what a treat. I got to check out your comedy. You were hysterical tonight. You're probably stand-up.
Oh,
it's probably insane.
Great.
Oh, my goodness. Where can we check that out?
Well, I don't know. I just did a show, but the guys are saying, you want to do it again? Because each time it was an experiment in May because I was supposed to go to New York and perform at the Laurie Beachman Theater in May. So they said, well, wait, we've got to think. You're basically the same night you were going to be here. You could just do it on this pay-per-view live thing. And I did it, and it was a smash. So they're like, well, I guess you're doing it again. So now we're threatening late July, August something, but I'll keep you posted.
Oh, please do. And then let us, especially over here on the East Coast, we can let people know you're going to be out there. So, yeah. Definitely.
Okay, cool.
Definitely. Allison, thank you so much. It was
a pleasure. Thank you.
I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I hope
to talk to you
real soon again.
All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Allison Argram, thank you. Have a good night. All the best to you. Take care, and we'll talk soon, I hope.
You too. Wash your hands. Be careful.
Of course, of course. Thank you. Bye, hon.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Oh, wow, what a sweetheart. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Both guests. Cindy had so much to say. I mean, my goodness. We could have gone all night with Cindy alone. Her Hollywood information we barely even touched base on, you know. We only really talked about her dad and Robert Mitchum. Could you imagine the people that went through her house?
I know.
But,
we have to end the episode, Joanne.
Yeah, I know. We're going to get cut off. I know. Well, folks, thank you so much. Thank you to our guest, Cindy Mitchum. I can't speak, John. Help me, please. Asbill and the wonderful Allison Argram. Check out their stuff, and thank you to our sponsors. We're losing time. I don't know if I'm going to get them in tonight. Thank you to the High Farm Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video, Kitnesville, Pennsylvania, KWB Wines, Teas for the Times, FinTech Productions, Oleander Public Relations, Take a Break from Cancer.org, and coming up on the show on Sunday, the Radio Gunners. And
Joanne, I have to go, Joanne.
Go ahead, honey. Go ahead.
Right.
I'll see you later.
Right,
we have Michael Cole coming up on Sunday. He couldn't make the show on Wednesday. He'll be with us on Sunday. So we thank you all. I think I've got maybe 10 seconds left here. We're going to have a great time on Sunday. So please tune in. If not, we'll catch you soon. We thank you so much. And I really enjoyed speaking to Allison and Cindy tonight. Appreciate it. Everybody have a good evening and take care. Bye-bye.